The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Sunday, October the 19th, 2025.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 91, The Corinthville Caper. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. Ed, how you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We could banter here, but I think we bantered quite a bit at the top.
We did. Do you want to just talk about this freaking Superman comic? Because it was freaking amazing.
It was. This was a pretty, and I say standard, but not standard in a bad way. Standard as far as what we have experienced so far is how I will use the word standard. A very standard Superman Golden Age story. It was.
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think you would get a story like this nowadays.
No.
If you did, it would be because somebody is trying to write like they did in the Golden Age rather than an idea they came up with today. But it was very fun. Seemed like maybe somebody had watched, you know, a couple movies recently or maybe read a couple fiction novels recently when they sat down to do this story.
Without giving anything away, to me, it was an episode of Scooby-Doo. It just, instead of ghosts, it was something else.
Could be. Yeah, I could see that. And I don't even think Scooby-Doo was around yet.
No.
Scooby-Doo was like in the 60s.
60s,
or
yeah.
Yeah, yep. Like mid-60s or late 60s. Yeah. But yeah, it was that kind of intention with the story, I thought. Yeah.
And if you follow my Blue Sky or my threads or you're subscribed to my newsletter, I did release 2 panels from the book, from the story we're talking about today. And it does feature Superman either punching or throwing a gorilla, which should tell you how much fun we're going to have with this.
Right. Yeah.
So today we're looking at the Corinthville Caper, the second of 4 Superman stories that appear in Superman number 11. It was written by Jerry Siegel with art by Leo Nowak. It has a cover date of July/August 1941. But according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics at mikesamazingworld.com, the issue hit the stands on May 2nd, 1941. And here is what happened in the issue or in the story. Clark and Lois investigate reports of giant animals near Corinthville, which have panicked the town. They find the reporter Grant Fellows, who filed the story, and have him bring them to the laboratory of Dr. Emil Karlstrom. Karlstrom is doing animal experiments, but nothing that would create giant creatures. Lois and Clark go in search of the animals, only to encounter an escaped ape. Superman stops the ape and later finds Dr. Karlstrom tied up. They are almost eliminated in a cave-in, but Superman prevails. Finally, Fellows reveals that the giant animals were a hoax to scare Karlstrom into leaving because the reporter had found a gold mine on the scientist's property. Fellows tries to kill everyone, but Superman makes the scene, rescuing Lois and capturing Fellows. The synopsis comes from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Ed, what'd you think about this one?
It was fun. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy it. I've been reading, you know, in our modest break here of recording Golden Age stories, I've been reading a lot of contemporary books, just keeping up with those books coming out that I try to keep up with. So this was a nice kind of refresher break from what was starting to become just an uncomfortable trend of the newer stories. So it was, I enjoyed it. Now, there were several things that, several story elements that kind of took me out for a minute because they didn't necessarily make sense. So I did notice there were a lot more, maybe like they felt like story hiccups than other stories have been. Almost at times it felt like there were multiple ideas that Siegel wanted to stitch together, but in thinking about them, he didn't think about them together. It was almost a, you know, I like this. Oh, how about that? Oh, it, you know, rather than a, let's go from A to Z, tell a story, kind of like some of the stories will feel. And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but it's just something that I noticed. I guess I wanted something a little more fluid to enjoy than what this turned out to be, but it didn't take away from my enjoyment of it really a whole lot at all.
Yeah. It's got a lot of, I say a lot, two times Superman throws animals into the horizon, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird. I think any time for me, knowing what Superman has become and what he will become and the kind of menaces that he'll face throughout his career, it just always cracks me up when they got him fighting a gorilla or a giant or I guess a giant snake. It's like a big anaconda or something. But
right. Yeah.
It's that's what I thought was funny about it. Superman in all his strength wrestling with a gorilla, which I have to assume at this point, obviously he's not as strong in the Golden Age as he is now.
Right.
But I don't think when we get to it, I don't think that gorilla really gave him much of a fight.
It didn't seem to. I mean, he.
But I will say real quick before you start getting into the story.
Okay.
When I first sat down to read this, I noticed that my tablet the battery was dead. So I started to charge the tablet and I went ahead to start to read it on my phone. Mm-hmm. When I read it on my phone, I do it panel by panel, which with a modern comic is not that fun. But with an old comic like this, it's not that bad of an experience because the panels are all square or rectangular, you know, they don't flow together like some of the modern ones. But for some reason, as I'm reading this, I get to that first page. And so the first screen that I see is that opening bit that I'm sure you'll read when we get to it. Mm-hmm. And then it just went from that panel. It skipped the two panels beneath it on that first page and went straight to the first panel on the second page. And I was like, what the hell? What? They're just not even going to... They just jumped right into it, didn't they?
That's a little bit of... those two panels do kind of set things up for you, yeah. But
I was really... Yeah. I almost wrote that down as something to talk about, which obviously I am. But then, of course, when my tablet charged up and I went back to give it a look, I was like, wow, I'm glad I did this because that skipped those two freaking panels. And matter of fact...
I wonder why.
Page on here. Hold on, let me do something real quick because
I was going to say that's where it skipped to.
Yeah,
page.
I mean, I had that first panel on the first page, so I got to read all about, you know, there's some new menace and a story, and he puts Clark and Lois on it, and then suddenly Lois and Clark are in the car, and so I thought, well, maybe that's what it's supposed to
happen. Yeah,
because they do kind of explain in that opening that, you know, it's what's going to be going on, but I don't know. I felt it was weird.
So here in the first, it's a half, maybe a little bit more, maybe a 60% page, the splash, which is how they've been opening a lot of these Golden Age stories. And the narrator tells us here,
"It is the function of the large metropolitan daily newspaper to keep its readers informed of all developments in the news."
Boy, that has changed.
"Thus, when a fantastic report reaches Metropolis's Daily Planet, editor Perry White sends forth Lois Lane and Clark Kent to check its authenticity. The two reporters find themselves launched into the midst of a thrilling adventure, made all the more exciting by the timely appearance of the mighty Man of Steel, Superman."
Now, the artwork that accompanies that is a neighborhood of people rushing away towards you. You're looking back over them at their neighborhood, which is being completely sundered by a giant gorilla, two giant elephants, and a giant lion. And maybe they're fighting between themselves, maybe not, but they are destroying the neighborhood that the people are escaping from. So that is our story. Lois and Clark are going to investigate giant animals destroying neighborhoods somewhere in the greater metropolis or the greater Daily Planet reading area.
Which,
yeah, so
right away, it's like, all right, this is going to be awesome. Superman is going to fight giant animals. This is going to be great.
A giant elephant. I mean, that's going to be cool.
And I think when we're seeing these animals tear apart these buildings, I feel like this is still kind of that time where people just assume that if it's a wild animal, their first instinct is to want to kill human beings, you know?
Probably.
And so especially when you make them giant, it just makes their anger and rage and and willingness to kill humans just as big. Yeah.
The anti-human is that much more greater because it's a giant a giant beast.
It's
and
like
so
Captain America. If you're a good person, you get the serum, you become a better person. If you're a bad person, you get the serum, you become a worse person. So it's the same thing.
Right. Exactly. So one of the two panels that you missed here kind of helps set things up a little bit better. The first, we see Perry White holding a missive that's been sent in that says Corinthville Clarion, that's the paper in the area, reports gigantic animals terrifying the populace. Citizens are hurriedly packing and fleeing. Now, that is very much a description of the artwork we see here in the splash here. I mean, that tells it completely, pretty much. Well, Perry's, you know, kind of suspect. I'm sure the giant animals is kind of what caught his attention of, is this really going on? So he decides to send Lois and Clark to check it out. The first panel on the next page is the panel that you had skipped to in your reading because of your phone, for whatever. I don't know why it would do that. Of them driving off. So you had the splash page with the animals and the little narration part and not any direction. And then all of a sudden you see, well, Lois and Clark are going somewhere. And then as you read a couple more panels, you see where they're going. In this first panel, it doesn't even tell you that. So you're going from giant animals destroying neighborhoods to Lois and Clark zooming away in their car. Yep. Maybe they're running away. Maybe they're trying to escape it too. And that's what this little panel is. But then we find out they're going in one direction and all of the giant animal refugees are going in the other direction, as we have seen in TV shows and movies. You know, you're going towards the danger. People are running away from danger to really get your mind on the fact that something really bad is happening because everybody's getting away. But these two fools are going right into the middle of it. They hook up with this gentleman named Grant Fellows, who is supposed to be a reporter for the Corinthville, whatever the name of the paper was. Clarion.
Clarion, yeah.
He is going to be their guide because he was a witness. He has seen this.
He's the one that filed the story.
He wrote the news article and... Yeah, so it's all him, and so he is also their contact. So they go to meet up with him, and he tells them the story of a giant dog, he says, that he ran into in the woods, strolling through the woods one day when I saw... Yeah,
it's the exact same
when
thing.
When I saw a giant dog,
I was strolling through the woods one day when a giant dog came my way. Yeah, I did the exact same
that's
thing.
That's the way it feels, the way it's written, too, yeah. And sure enough, the artwork here is a little man. He's probably a third the size of the dog, from the ears to the paws on the front chest and everything.
Yeah, so he's not even as tall.
A giant dog.
He doesn't come up to the dog's shoulder.
That's if this is true, that is a giant dog. You're absolutely right.
Giant is the right word.
So, Lois and Clark want Grant to take them to, I guess he is adding to the story that he thinks that the giant animal is related to these experiments that Dr. Carlstrom is doing at his lab. And so I would want to go to wherever he saw the dog, actually, if it were me investigating. That's where I would want to start. But when he says, well, I think that it's because of what's going on over here, automatically, Lois and Clark, because he is their guide, believe him, and they're like, okay, well, then take us over here. We want to see that, since you think that's the cause.
Yeah.
But then he's like, no, you misunderstand. You need to go over here and see where it's all happening, because I'm going over here away from it. I don't want to go. And they're like, no, you're our guide. You have to come with us and show us. So they kind of manhandle him, Lois kind of manhandles him into going with them. Now, This is the start of one of the things that happens that kind of took me out of the story when it finishes a little later on. They get to the property where this laboratory is, and their position in the property is at the bottom of a bluff.
Yeah.
And at top of the bluff, they see a fenced-in compound, and Clark tells them that is the compound where the laboratory is. So it's up and on the other side of the fence. It's over there. It's like, okay, I mean, that makes that there's nothing about that that is odd to me. It's like, okay, so it's just they came from, I don't know, the backside because they could get in unseen or whatever, and it happens to be on a bluff. Okay. So Clark, one thing that I noticed here, Clark climbs the fence. Now, the artwork is of looking at him on the fence and the huge nature scene behind him, as if he is thousands of feet in the air on this fence. The bluff looked to be about, you know, the top of the fence would be about 50, 60 feet high. That's it. This next scene looks like it is tens of thousands of feet high. I mean, it is very high. He's on the fence. And I thought, perspective got kind of wacky there when you drew one in reference to the other. So I noticed that, but I'm like, yeah, that didn't really bug me. But something about the fence and the bluff will bug me a little bit later on, and I'll point that out. I think I rectified it in my mind what went on there. Clark falls off the fence. All we see in the panel is him falling, almost like some kind of wrestling move onto the ground, and Lois is asking him, are you hurt? Now, interestingly enough, the next panel is looking through the fence, and we see that a female is holding a shotgun on Clark, and or next time I'll really aim for you. We didn't see anybody shoot. Well, he loses his hat when he's on the fence. I assumed that was because of the wind, which is also drawn, which would also make you think he was really high up, because as the wind, you know, it's like, yeah. So apparently with the shotgun, she took a shot at Clark, and that's why he fell off the fence, you know, frightened or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, what I notice here is Lois, Clark, and Grant are standing even with the fence, looking through it. When we see the first appearance of the fence, that may be kind of difficult to do because where the fence is placed on the bluff. It doesn't necessarily look like there's much. It almost looks like there's cliffs right to the fence. You can see in this bottom middle panel. So, yeah, there's a little wiggle room. Maybe because of the perspective, there is kind of like a landing strip there.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really tell.
I mean, when you're looking at that last panel with Clark hanging on the fence and the hat blowing off and all the surroundings, it does look like right below him, there's a bit of green and then like a brown around the green. Like that's the top of the bluff. And then everything else is below the bluff.
So they're even now with the fence, they're looking through the fence and they see who is going to turn out to be Carlstrom, which is Dr. Emil Carlstrom's. I'm sorry, that's very difficult to roll off the tongue. Carlstrom's daughter. So I don't know if she knew these people were here, or she like does security checks with the shotgun. She's in charge of security. I don't know. But she's kind of, I kind of like the way she was dressed. She's kind of dressed, in my mind, kind of sportily for the 40s. Like she does, she's wearing the pants that have the funky pouches on the hips or whatever that is, like polo players do, or whatever that style is. Like, I don't know what it's called.
Like she's dressed to go exploring.
Or she is going sport shooting.
Yeah.
Like maybe she's been out shooting skeet or something like, skeet.
And then she noticed a man
something
on
like
the
that.
Fence.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, oh, here's something, you know, bigger to shoot at, you know. But yeah, I like that in this instance, the way she's dressed kind of matches the fact that she's packing a shotgun, regardless of what she was doing. So so they tell her, you know, hey, yeah, we're not trying to break in. We're actually reporters trying to get information on a story about Dr. Carlstrom's laboratories. They come a knocking and they're asking, will you let us in? And she says, Lord, you're the devil. Would you look at him? No, I'm sorry. That's country lyrics from the 80s. So they just ask, you know, here, she is on the inside, right? They're on the outside. They want in. She is determined enough to keep people out that she's carrying a shotgun. But all you have to do is ask her, and she's like, oh, yeah, come on, you can look around.
Yeah. I don't know if it's smart, but I'll let you in.
Yeah, I'm like, really? That's all it? Yeah. So, okay, that's all it took. Move the story along. Let's get going. So, okay, that's cool. So, again, we see that Grant is very hesitant. So much so that Lois notices, huh, he might even be a bigger coward than Clark, which is very harsh because here a little bit later on, she reacts to something that happens to Clark, not in a way somebody that is very put offish about somebody would. She has very strong emotions about what happens, like somebody who cares for them instead. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, I like that panel there of her and her thought bubble. Clark seems to have met his equal at last. It's a toss-up as to which of the two is the most cowardly.
Yeah, they were not. She's not kind at all in a hat that looks like it's been stored somewhere that a mouse has gotten to it.
Right.
Right, yeah. I mean, if it weren't symmetrical on both sides, that's what it looks like, is like a mouse has gotten to it. But I guess, and then you see the panel before that there's even one on top. So it must be a four-point. So
one of those hats must be in place with bobby pins because it's just literally sitting on the back of her head.
Yeah, it's on the back of her head like this.
It's weird.
Okay, so we go inside, and our two reporters have a talk with the evil Dr. Carlstrom, Emil Carlstrom, and he's like, I do experiments on animals, yes. I don't enlarge any animals. As a matter of fact, I'm experimenting on animals, trying to find out the secrets to their longevity, their long life, so that, you know, we can do that to us too, and we can live longer too. Doesn't have anything to do with making giant animals.
Yeah.
So, So then, now this, here's another instance that kind of surprised me. After that explanation, Clark asks Carol if he can look around. And we cut to Clark looking around. Okay. Of course, you know, at this point, something's going to happen. I wonder what he runs into. So he's outside looking around. He hears a scream that he recognizes. Let's see. He recognizes it as Lois. So he recognizes, goes and checks it out, and it is Lois being assaulted by a giant gorilla, which makes sense here. But my question is, right before, Lois had a pen and pad and seemed very intent on interviewing.
Yeah.
Clark asked permission and wanted to go out to look around and went to do that. Where in the heck did Lois go outside to be menaced by anything, much less a gorilla, which we'll get to here in a minute? So it's like,
yeah, I mean, it obviously she decided after he left that she was going to go look around as well, but they don't tell us that in any fashion. It's just, do you mind if I look around? And yeah, Lois is sitting there writing stuff down. And so, right. Yeah.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. So check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
A long time ago, in a comic book rack far, far away. During the years between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Marvel Comics kept the Star Wars magic alive, delivering bold new stories, expanding the mythology, and taking our favorite heroes and villains on unforgettable adventures. Now join me, the irredeemable Shag, and an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we journey back to this incredible era. We begin with a comic adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back and continue through the thrilling tales leading up to Return of the Jedi. If you're a seasoned Star Wars veteran who knows your Shira Bree from your hoojibs, or a brave explorer venturing into these comics for the first time, this is your hyperspace lane to classic Star Wars adventure. Join us for Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi, every other month on the Fire & Water Podcast Network. Beginning in June 2025.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
And you would think, well, he's got the outside. That's good. I'll investigate inside. We'll split up and cover more. So there's a giant gorilla here menacing Lois. This is one of the, this is probably the height really of this story, the humor in this height is this battle, which I wonder if we should keep track of this. How many times Superman fights a gorilla? It seems like it is a theme that comes up.
Yeah. And they don't ever call it a gorilla, just a giant ape.
Ape. Well, I mean, it looks like a gorilla to me.
I keep meaning to look up, you know, because I know that for a long time, what scientists thought about gorillas was completely wrong, you know, until Jane Goodall went in there and spent all that time with them. So maybe this is a period where they don't really understand.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm a gorilla sure. is.
Early 40s.
Yeah.
I do remember from my biology degree days that there is a difference between monkeys and apes.
Yes.
And there is a difference between baboons and monkeys and apes. And like, monkeys are like, one of them primarily exists in the New World and one of them in the Old World. And I mean, there's monkeys and apes. There's very definite characteristics, but always keep in mind, those of you out there, this is the tip from Ed, that if you ever encounter a monkey, it is just as strong and can rip you apart as an ape can. It's just smaller.
Yep.
So don't think that the cute little monkey that you see people carrying around like a baby and everything. No, when those things get to be adults, if they get pissed, they can rip your arms out of the socket, just like a gorilla can. So in a lot of ways, there's not that much difference except the size. That's all.
Yeah. Now, I looked it up just because I was curious. Mm-hmm. Tarzan, the Tarzan books, of course, about a guy who was raised by great apes. Again, they don't call them gorillas in those books.
Right. They're apes.
But
I believe that was supposed to be in Africa.
Yeah.
Is that where that occurs?
Okay. Yeah. And it was published. The first one was published in 1912.
Even before that, that was probably in the height of the, I'm going to put together a group and we're going to go explore the dark continent and we're going to bring back knowledge and specimens and everything like that. So in the 40s, I think we were a little bit more culturally progressed. People could argue maybe not significantly, but to some extent.
So according to Google, I guess the human beings have been aware of gorillas since the 5th century. But it wasn't until sometime between 1855 and 1959 that somebody brought back actual photos. Gorillas were discovered in 1902. I guess they knew what gorillas were, but he must, you know, knowing Jerry Siegel, being a big fan of the pulps, he's probably just doing his Edgar Rice Burroughs thing here with the ape.
Right. This is probably closer to Tarzan or what he had to deal with than anything else, really.
Yep.
So, Superman defeats the evil gorilla, the evil ape, gets him. He crushes him, throws him to the ground. The ape tries to crush Superman in the big bear hug, and then Superman punches it up away. He hits it, which I'm sure killed it, but yeah. He hits it so hard that it flies off. And this is, for those of you who can see, that's Avery there.
Yes, I know.
So next, he punches him and he flies off. And the next panel, the ape is at his feet.
Huh. Maybe.
I'm not.
Yeah, that's not a good.
Maybe straight up and he came straight down or so. Yeah, I don't
sure
know.
Sure doesn't look again, like it. That's a bad sequence.
And yes, I am being nitpicky, but just because what I see doesn't necessarily make sense either of its own or in relation to something else. I'm not pointing it out to make fun or to say, see how these stories sucked. Yeah. Or it's like, no, just, I don't know what they were thinking. It's whatever.
Based on the angle of the punch, I'm going to fill in what happened between those two panels. He punches the gorilla. The gorilla goes flying off to the horizon, but before it can get too far from him, Superman reaches out, grabs it by the ankle, and slams it down at his feet. That's what we didn't see.
Could very well be, because we saw a slam a couple panels ago, and the ape was still semi-conscious, but Superman wanted to completely knock him out, so he didn't have to worry about him at all. So yeah, he did the punch him away, grab him, pull him back, and slam him on the ground move. Yeah, we see that all the time.
Right. It would have been really cool to see had that really happened.
Yes. But that's not all, folks, because immediately after he defeats the ape, Lois says, behind you, and Superman turns around, and there's a huge snake just coiled up there, but it's a big snake.
Yeah.
Not necessarily sure what the worry is, because in the next panel, apparently, I think it is meant to show, because the narration in the panel where you first see the snake says that it is poised to strike, and then the next panel, it strikes as Superman. I don't believe these kind of snakes strike.
No, it's the big
wrap around them, crush them kind of snake, exactly. Whatever that's called.
Yeah, boa constrictor, anaconda,
pythons,
something like that.
Boas,
constrictor.
Now they will, if you get really close, they will, they will strike, but not like rattlesnake 3 feet away, freaking launching, striking kind of thing, which is what this dude does. He's coiled up in a nice little coil there, and then all of a sudden he uncoils completely. The constrictors, by and large, don't strike. That also is something that caught me. I'm like,
this. I mean, this story just, I guess, kind of shows the zoological knowledge of the time, or maybe just that they just didn't care enough to do any research at all. Just going by what they've seen on serials and TV and stuff like that,
and
movies.
That's fine.
Yeah,
you're making fiction.
Yeah,
you're pretending. I am not in a place really to tell you that you're pretending wrong.
Right.
Now, in reality, I can say that it's my understanding, and my understanding is maybe a little bit more advanced than most because I actually do have a BS in biology. So a lot of these things I've been exposed to more deeply than just a normal person would be in their Google AI reading. I still could be wrong. I mean, but in the striking, the Superman moves out of the way. The anaconda, the boa, does it even tell us what it is?
It just says serpent.
Just a giant snake. Yes. Not even a snake, a serpent. A serpent and an ape. Very biblical terminology here.
Yeah.
From the Jewish writers. Jewish writers, biblical, anyways. In striking, the animal goes past Superman and would have gone completely past Superman, except Superman grabs it by the end portion, the tail and middle part there as he goes away, and decides to help him go away by slinging it in a completely different direction, probably whiplashing the snake and breaking its back.
Yep.
But we don't really care about that. But if you'd have just let him go, he'd have struck at you so hard and he'd have slid it on away and whatever.
It may turned right around and come back, though.
It's obvious that
these animals want to kill human beings.
Yes, obviously. Because they're being led by the evil Dr. Emil Karlstrom,
right.
And they're part of what he's doing, and we need to figure out why and what is going on, because right. Somebody saw a giant dog, and now we have seen a giant ape,
yeah.
And a giant serpent. Yeah. I mean, those two were large. I don't think they were, like, larger than normal.
No, yeah,
maybe
exactly.
Both at the extreme range of normal size.
They, yeah. You know,
but not a freaking
right.
Three-story dog yeah, like the dude says he's seen. We haven't seen that.
Yep. You think of that's the size of that dog, and then you're like, well, if these are giant in proportion, they'd be much, much larger. But
you would think so, yeah. I'm sure at some point in his history, Superman will meet giant apes.
Yes.
Like giant. I'm sure they're out there waiting.
I think I'm thinking of a Godzilla. I think there was a JLA versus Godzilla a year or so ago. I don't think it was King Kong.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. So we move on. Superman is helping Lois. They hear something going on at the laboratory. So we go to the laboratory, and there is the big crowd of villagers a la Frankenstein, except, you know, they don't have the torches and pitchforks. We're more advanced than that. But they're trying to crash the laboratory. Now, my question is this. The last time we saw the laboratory property, it was on a bluff. How in the heck did these people get here? Easy to explain. They came in from the other side,
yeah.
From the main side, where they must have a road to get in and everything yeah. like that, which is even level with. But just quickly, when I saw this, I'm like, "How in the hell did they get up there? What is? Oh, okay, yeah. So they're they're banging and yelling, tear him apart. He's the one who created the monsters.
All because of one news article.
Yes,
that's it. One witness.
Wow. So
that's it.
So people read one article and believe everything
right.
it says? How weird is that?
It's been going on for a long time.
What is that? Man, that is crazy. We don't do that.
Of course, this was back when you should have been able to trust the news, I guess. I don't know. I doubt it.
I was going to say, truly, has there ever been a time that, I mean, you know, we hear stories about dirty newspaper men and dirty owners.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
It was all about selling the paper, and you sold the paper by headlines, you know, so it's like, has news in the U.S. really ever worked?
Yellow journalism, I think they called it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's as long as people have written word on paper, there have been unbelievable things. So I don't know.
You're right.
Before you had access to multiple sources, how did you vet one particular source? Or
You didn't.
Everybody in Kansas believes something. Everybody in Texas believes something. In Oklahoma, they believe something. And it's like, So now we see Carol and Emil, and they're doing the standard, looking out the window, looking past the drapes, you know, kind of seeing how bad it is. And Superman and Lois hop up, and he puts Lois down somewhere, I guess maybe on the outskirts of the property a little bit, somewhere away from the people, the villagers, the peasants, whatever you want to call them. Although they're not dressed like peasants or anything. One dude here has got a nice three-piece suit on, and he's got a nice fedora and his tie.
Based on where he's leaping in that first panel of the second row, I'm assuming he's left her on the roof of the laboratory. I don't know, because he's standing on the roof on isn't he?
Well, on the third panel, does that look like they're standing above or at the same level as the people?
Looks like they're at the same level, yeah.
Maybe what he did was jump to the other side of the building and leave her there, and he's coming, something like that. But
can I point out?
Can I
point out real quick, because we're getting ready to get to something on the next page that's confusing me. But I like that Carol Karlstrom, she's ready to open fire on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shall I fire at them? She asks her dad, and he's like, lower that gun. Don't give them any provocation. And so this is the point where I'm kind of like, well, maybe they aren't the bad guys. They said they weren't earlier, but you can't believe a bad guy when they tell you they're not a bad guy.
Well, right. That's what I would expect you to say. And say,
but the fact that he says, Don't give them any provocation. Also could be taken a completely different way. Yes, I would love it if you killed them, but you're not going to kill them all with that one shotgun, and you're just going to make them more pissed off. So
could be.
You could go either way. But I think this is the part of the story where I started going, I don't think they're the bad guys.
I hadn't made up my mind either way yet because I hadn't seen enough for it to point to them. I do like the fact that this panel kind of supports the way she was when Clark first tried to climb the fence. Yes. She's very protective. She can handle a shotgun really well. And that's a continuation of that characterization, which, you know, a lot of times in these stories, characters are just, they're throwaway.
Yeah.
They work for that one panel to move some aspect of the story along, and that's it. But here, I like that the writer, or perhaps the artist, whoever did it, thought enough of what had occurred before to maintain how this character looks at things, at least as far as we would perceive it. So
kind of a shoot first, ask questions later kind of person.
Yeah, she's aggressive, aggressively protective, which nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
Maybe of her dad, you know, the daughter being protective of the dad, that would be cool. Maybe as the employee of a scientist, you know, an evil scientist, that could be. We haven't necessarily seen anything to say that that's what it is, but that's also possible. She's the underling kind of aspect. So not seen this anywhere before in a Superman story. He jumps down in front of an entire crowd and is going to stop the entire crowd. It's not just one or two guys. It's not a big bad. It's not an evil supervillain. He is going to stop a crowd of people. And they weigh into him. All of them dressed differently, which I kind of like. Even over here is a female in a red dress, kind of like the daughter, but she doesn't look like the daughter. So they bum rush him. I guess I can still say that in the 21st century. I don't know.
I'll admit that first panel there on the bottom row, the guy, okay, so he says, back, I warn you. One guy on one side of him says, trample him. Then the guy on the other side says, listen to him, he's telling us what to do. That's the tone that you should get from that. Like, he's upset, listen to him, that guy.
Yeah.
But when I first read it, I read it as if Superman just immediately convinced him, and he's like, well, listen to him, he's telling us what to do. We should do
what
he's
telling us what to do.
He just automatically went robot. He's telling us what to do, so we've got it. So that confused me for about a fraction of a second, and then I read it differently, and I said, oh. He's all like, telling us what to do,
eh? You're just reading the words. Yeah. It's like, listen to him. He's telling us what to do. And it's like, no, that's not how that dude said that. Okay, let me try that again.
Yeah,
that's one of those, and I do that all the time. You know, I'll read, and at some point I'll be like, no, that didn't sound right. So I'll go back and I'll read it again a different way, or a different tone or whatever. Yeah.
And so when we get to the next page, I think it's the very first panel, we're going to have to talk about that one.
Okay. So Superman starts, and all of you can just kiss my ass for what I'm about to say. Okay. He starts beating them off. Yeah. I don't want to hear it. Okay. Those are the words that came to mind. Get off and go somewhere else.
That's, you know, I have to say real quick, as a kid, I remember distinctly being on vacation once. And, you know, I got an older brother and a younger brother, and we get to where we're supposed to be, and the doors of the station wagon open up, and both of my brothers go running out, and they're just being all crazy, and my dad's trying to wrangle them. And I was trying to say, I guess, stop jerking around. But what I said was, stop jerking off. And my dad goes, don't say it that way. I don't, my memories aren't, you know, I don't have a lot of memories from my childhood, but that's one that's always stuck.
Funny.
Don't say it that way. And I was like, what? I don't know.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And you're not going to, and that's good. You're not supposed to.
I couldn't understand why at that age, why I couldn't say it. I don't understand. Right. It's the same thing, right? No, you'll understand later. And once I did understand, I was like, oh yeah,
you're right. That was, I should have said that another way.
Yeah, but Superman is beating them off because they're trying to dogpile.
They're on him, and he's beating them off of him. So he's beating them.
That's
never mind. Okay. So, So then they scatter and he goes back inside. So what is it that you, okay, Superman so that, goes back inside?
If you just look at that first panel here, it's page 7 of the story. It mm-hmm. looks like he's just punched a big group of people. Like a okay. ferocious Superman punch. And my first right. thought was, God damn, he probably killed at least 3 of those people. And I bet there's dozens more that are injured.
And I would have to agree that that has to be what happened, yes.
The narration box, however, says, unexpectedly, a sudden eruption, and the crowd is swept back by the lone figure of Superman. The narration makes me feel like when the Hulk would clap his hands together and cause
yes.
a big...
So
is he...
The thunderclap.
Is he punching them, or did he just somehow punch the air and it caused a concussive force okay. or something?
Now, the artist, I am fairly sure that the artist drew Superman punching the people.
Agreed.
But at the time, that may not have been an acceptable thing
yeah.
or an acceptable thing for Superman. So the narration softened it. But there is nothing about this panel that tells me Superman did not punch the people who were
right.
on him.
Yeah, that's why I mean,
that is exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, the action in it's like the one of the few times where the action in the panel does not look like what the narration is describing.
Right.
And so I'm assuming we've got a few dead people now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Somebody saw this and they're like, and it was easier to caption than it was to change the panel. Yeah. And so that's what we have.
If it was just a concussive force that knocked them backwards. Their reaction in that second panel, I think, wouldn't be as, because they're terrified. But what of the huge monsters? He's more to be feared than any of them. And they're gone.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. One concussive blast that may have knocked them off their feet wouldn't do that. Killing a few of them with one swing of your fist would do that.
And I'm sure that it was not a hidden pretty scene of what those people turned out to be like after that punch.
Somebody should write that story.
It, you know, I was a survivor of a Superman punch.
Missed, you know, that, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Clouds of body blood
parts
and brain.
And yeah, it's yeah, it could not have been pretty. So Superman goes back inside, encounters Carol, and asks where the doctor is. Also inside, I think, who we haven't seen in a little while, must be Grant. I think that's who the dude here with the purple is, right next to her in this first panel middle row.
Yeah,
I don't
fellows,
know.
Yeah,
I don't know what other man it could be, because Clark is here, or Superman. The doctor's gone, which neither one of them had a hat on anyways. But
yeah, they didn't do a very good job.
Yeah. We don't see him again for several panels. He's barely in this one, but
yeah,
he's there enough to say he was here a little while ago, which
when we do
she could have said. So.
Yeah, exactly. When we do see him again, I think it's the next page. He has like a line and then he's just gone. And I'm like, I couldn't understand the point of him even being in the story at that point, because he's not doing anything. It's just, but
he's
eventually
over here at the cave mouth.
Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah, it's almost like they're like, we got to pop him in here. We got to pop him in.
Got to remind people that he came up there with Lois and Clark, even though
didn't
show him.
Yeah, that he's up here.
Yeah.
And he's not doing anything.
No, not at all.
I mean, it's been Clark and Lois.
Yeah.
Superman, you know, almost the whole time. So. Yeah.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Step into the savage world of the Hyborian Age and journey through a land of sorcery, steel, and epic adventure with me, Stephen Orr, on Hither Came Conan. Together, we'll explore the legendary Conan the Barbarian comic series from Marvel Comics, starting with the groundbreaking first issue from 1970 and working our way through each epic tale, one issue at a time. Along the way, I'll also dive into any other Conan comics I can get my hands on. Because when it comes to the titular Cimmerian, there's no such thing as too much adventure. Whether you're a diehard Conan fan or just discovering the greatest barbarian of all time, this podcast is your gateway to the blood-soaked battlefields, treacherous kingdoms, and forgotten treasures of Robert E. Howard's timeless creation. New episodes are packed with action, insights, and a little humor, all dedicated to the world of Conan and the creators who brought him to life on the comic book page. So sharpen your swords and subscribe to Hither Came Conan today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Crom demands it.
Remember, remember, the 5th of November.
The gunpowder treason and plot.
For I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Coming soon to the Magazines and Monsters podcast feed.
A deep dive into one of the best works of Alan Moore's career.
Join me, Billy D, and my co-host, Dr. Ange, as we explore the incredible series,
V for Vendetta.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
So apparently wherever Superman set Lois down, she was able to get back inside because she's now inside with Carol and with Grant. Superman asks about Dr. Emil, and she's like, well, the daughter, she would be the one to know, doesn't. And so Superman's like, okay, let's search the laboratory and find him. I guess the thought being because the scene outside was so tumultuous, so bad, something may have happened to him, like if he was outside and all of that, or maybe some amount of them broke in and grabbed him while we weren't looking or something, you know, so bad outside, inside where it's quiet, is everybody here? Is everybody okay? And one of them is missing. So let's find him, see what he's doing. Don't see him, but then Superman uses the super hearing. And he's like, I hear somebody moaning. Where are they moaning? He uses his X-ray vision and he sees, oh, he's moaning from underneath the laboratory in a set of secret tunnels. So here we go with some added to whatever's going on. So Superman, which this is kind of amused me. Superman runs outside and starts digging through the underbrush. And Lois is like, what the heck are you doing, man? And he's like, oh, here's the entrance to the tunnel. I'm like, how did you know where the, okay, whatever, moving the story along. It's covered up with vegetation, right? Like, right, probably not 15, 20 feet from a door to the laboratory. Could be the main door. We don't know, but they have been this close anytime they've used that door to the entrance to tunnels under their laboratory. They had no idea, supposedly, no idea that it was there.
It's just a big wall of rock covered by vegetation.
That's, you know, we every Western TV series has this scene.
Yes.
This is a standard in 50s and 60s Western TV. Yeah. So every season, every show had at least one episode where they go, oh, I didn't even know it was there. And he moves one tumbleweed and there's the entrance to the cave.
You ever just see a jumble of plants just laying on top of each other in front of like a hill, there's probably a tunnel behind that.
there's a tunnel in there. Just wait for him to get to it. Yeah. Yep. So now, Superman, Carol, Lois, and Grant are at the entrance to the tunnel because this is where Superman heard the doctor, somewhere in these tunnels. So they go down, start looking around. Sure enough, Lois, Carol, and Superman find the doctor tied up laying on the floor of the tunnel. Now, at this point, I knew who was behind what was going on.
Yeah.
At this point in the story, not before, I may have suspected or thought maybe or whatever, but here I'm like, okay. And maybe this is why dude is not around and he just drops in, because they have to keep him.
Yep.
In mind, maybe not front of mind, but they have to keep him in mind in the story. That way it's not a complete surprise that you're like, well, who in the hell is that? He's, right. You know.
Yeah. So this second panel on this page where they're there at the cave entrance, and each of them, except for Lois, they all have something to say, even him, which is just, I knew I should have left town. And then the very next panel, they're in the cave And I think Superman asks, where's Fellows? And Carol says he's remained behind. And so with those two panels, I'm like, well, what was the point of even him being there? Just to say that, that didn't make any sense. And then by the time I got maybe to the next panel, the panel after that, I went,
I know why they did it that way. So they go on, they find the doctor. He's been, of course, by a third party, he's been tied up, knocked out, and put down here because it's not something the doctor could do for himself, trying to hide his involvement in anything. So he's here. Fortunately, his glasses are laying right here in the cave floor right next to him. He didn't lose them at any point other than when he was laying here and they fell off his face right here. Yeah. So unlike Velma, right, who is always losing the glasses and they're always like over there somewhere over, you know, there. Yeah.
Yep.
That's kind of a joke. It wasn't the best one, but it's all I got.
Well, Scooby-Doo reference. And I said this is like a Scooby-Doo story.
Yeah, so there we go. Bring in a full circle. That's right. And that's what we do, full circle.
See? That's right. So it's all planned out ahead of time. We plan this all out.
Tie it up like a Thanksgiving turkey or Christmas if you want to wait that long. That's whichever. So, you know, the typical, what happened? Do you know where you are? Do you know? And the doctor's like, no, I remember being hit and I remember waking up now and there's nothing in between. So. All right, then let's all go. And then all of a sudden, boom, the entrance to the cave blows up, which would lead you to believe that somebody is trying to trap them in there. Trap them in there, which means the other person is outside.
Interesting.
Okay. So several panels of just the four of them trapped in the cave, who is now Emil and Carol Carlstrom, Lois and Superman. Superman digs out something here. He's done it, burrowed through the rock. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't that drill kind of thing that we've seen Superman. That's not what he did. He was punching and clawing and, you know, so it would have been much cooler if we'd have seen him.
But that's not
how it was done.
I always liked that on the Super Friends.
Yeah, they jump up and he'll come down like a drill.
It's so cool.
It's like, okay. So they get out, and as they're climbing out, Grant is waiting for them, says, "You're alive. It's a miracle. I saw the man who blasted the entrance run off." Soup says, "Did you get a good look at him?" "Not very clearly. But would you recognize him if you were to see him again?" And he snatches him up and, well, he flies.
Oh,
but
totally.
Maybe it's okay that he's flying now. I don't know. That's still kind of iffy. But
You know, we said in Superman number 10, that's supposed to be the first instance of Superman flying, but they never call it. It's like I think it was the Silver Age when you first hear him actually say that he flies.
Right.
But I think after that, I think artists were just like, oh, well, I guess we can make him fly, but the writer just never refers to it as
flying. It's not addressed. When he grabs up Grant, he leaps off, which makes sense. That's how you would start, I would assume, getting the momentum to do something. But then in the next two panels, we see him do probably about a 25 or 30 degree change in path. And then in the next panel, we see the patrolling of an area whirly kind of movement as far as he's doing here. So he's flying.
Yeah. He's flying over the territory looking for somebody.
Right. They don't see anybody. So Soup brings him back down. Lo says, "Any luck?" "None at all," Grant says. And while they're talking, Superman rushes off and changes back to Clark and then comes back confronting, that's not the best word for it, Lois as Clark. "Clark, where have you been? You missed all sorts of excitement." He says, "Did I? I've been looking for giant animals because the last time we saw Clark, he asked if he could investigate outside of the laboratory." So that makes sense, which is cool because a lot of times things from beginning to end don't necessarily match up in these stories.
Yeah.
So just like the characterization of the daughter continued through, what Clark was doing continued through. So somebody paid enough attention to connect the two and make it very believable that that's what he was doing. So the Carlstroms and Clark and Grant and Lois are, I don't know what starts this. What does he say here? I've a healthy suspicion where the big brutes hide out if you'll follow me. So out of nowhere, Grant has an idea. And so they all follow him. It's a path that looks like it's one of those on the edge of the mountain paths. You know, you've got mountain on one side and drop off on the other. So they're following him, following it around, and it dead ends at a cliff. And Clark says, well, you know, we didn't find anything and the path ends. There's a cliff here. And Grant says, exactly. Aha!
Sinister plan.
Clark, but you said, and now I tell you to raise your hands, all of you, as maybe he's holding a pistol. It's kind of drawn kind of weird.
Right. It's there. You can see it. He's holding it close to his chest. It looks like he's got, because he's like pointing at him with one hand, but he's making like finger guns with that hand. Well, so it looks but he's holding the gun like on his other hand close to his chest.
But he's holding the gun like in his coat pocket or something. I mean, you don't see his hand. So I don't know. You'd have to ask the artist. What was your vision here for this panel? And he's like, I spent 45 seconds on it. I'm not sure what I was trying to. Yeah. So now we see. Obviously, he's the bad guy because he's pulled a gun on everybody. Means that I trumped up the fake story about giant creatures haunting the vicinity. I released that large ape and snake only to support my yarn. Okay, so he lied about the story. I guess he got the ape and snake from the lab when he I don't know. I don't know how anybody just has these things to release them, but okay. And then, of course, Lois asks the question, but your motive, that's what we're thinking. So she is us. I learned that a valuable old gold mine was located beneath the Carlstrom property. I thought that if I could frighten the doctor, I could buy his land for a song. Okay, so that explains why the tunnel system was there. I do not for a moment believe that anybody that bought property to build a laboratory would be unaware that an abandoned gold mine is underneath at all. Even in 1941, late 30s, early 40s, I don't believe that that's possible. It would have been attached to the deed that.
This is the Scooby-Doo moment, because many of those old episodes were people pretending to be ghosts to haunt something to scare whoever was living there off so they could buy the property or get the gold that was buried underneath it or something like that. Except for the fact that there's no ghosts involved, it's like you might as well be pulling off his mask and him going, I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those darn kids.
Yep, exactly like that. And that's exactly how it feels too. So now Grant is going to, I don't know, either shoot them and throw them over the cliff or make them jump over the cliff or whatever. But he's got a gun. He's got a cliff. He's got four witnesses that he needs to get rid of because they all know the truth about him. So everybody is dead at this point. Clark is first up. He backs up. And then finally, Grant takes a swing at him with his free hand, or he pushes him.
Yeah.
Clark falls off the cliff backwards, and we have a panel of Clark plummeting. Now, the next panel, you killer, you cold-blooded, ruthless killer, Lois exclaims as she jumps at him to fight him, wrestle the gun out of his hand, whatever is going to happen.
She's got a fist cocked back. I love this panel.
So, yes, part of her understands that at some point what just happened to Clark is going to happen to her, so she's reacting to that. I prefer to think that the main motivation for the way she's acting right now is because of what just happened to Clark.
Yeah.
If, like you said, dude pushed him, then she has gone, that's my man crazy, and is going to try to kill this dude for killing her man.
Now, we have seen her get upset before when she thought he died.
We have, but in this very story, she was talking about what a coward Clark was, and that maybe somebody is just as big a coward as he is.
Yep.
So that's not just he's a coward, but it's also, well, he's such a big coward, probably nobody could beat him. oh, wait, this dude might. So, I mean, that you know, the two don't, they don't match up.
He's a coward.
They don't match up.
But he's my coward.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, next panel, Clark is falling and he grabs a mini cliff for a protrusion of the mountain, whatever you want to call it, that stops his fall. He jumps up. It's enough for him to stand on. He takes off his Clark gear and he's Superman now. Well, somehow, Stephen, look at her leg and tell me what the hell's going on there.
I think it's broken.
I think that we're looking at major MCL, LCL kind of, yeah, she's out for the rest of the season.
Yeah,
easy.
She's, yeah.
I mean, that's, it's, yeah. So she has fallen. I don't know. He's pushed her off, thrown her off, whatever. So now Clark has fallen off the cliff. Lois has fallen off the cliff. Clark changed to Superman, jumps up, flies, saves her, takes her back up to the top of the cliff. He's holding her right next to him, like in an arm, Superman is. Grant is firing bullets that more than likely are bouncing off his chest, and none of them hit Lois, who is standing right here beside him. What direction do those bullets bounce off in? That they,
every direction, you know, except for the one in which Lois
except
is
the one at her. Yeah, it's okay. You have 360 degrees, so they can bounce off anywhere in like 190, maybe, and not that other. Yeah, okay. So that's something else that I'm like, she's standing right there, and those bullets are bouncing off of her, and she doesn't get hit? So, no. Once again, Superman punches the bad dude hard enough to fling him away, so hard that he loses the grip on the gun, and the gun goes flying off in another direction while the dude, Grant, what's his name? Fellows goes flying off, much like the people, the villagers that Batman, that Superman assaulted before with the thunder punch.
Yep.
Yeah. So, pulped him. But that's all that's left. Soup in a sack is all that there is left of the dude.
And yet, as he's leaping away, he's telling them, "Take him to the police.
Yes.
Scrape up what's left of him off the floor.
Take his remains to the police." Yeah. Tell them what happened and that this is the dude, though you can't tell, that was responsible. Yeah. That I safely deposited him at the foot of the cliff. Turn him, Clark. Superman says that's where Clark is. Clark fell. Superman rescued him, put him at the bottom of the cliff. Got Lois, took her to the top of the cliff.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty convenient. So, yeah. And Lois says goodbye for the present.
Yeah.
So she knows she'll see him again.
What is that line? Goodbye.
Superman's always rescuing me. Yeah,
who says goodbye for now is what she's saying, but goodbye for the present.
For the present. They get back. Apparently, Clark or Lois, who knows? No more competition really too much between the two as far as submitting the story. We haven't seen that in a while. But they give Perry the story and little back and forth here, and that's the end of this one.
This page makes the whole, you know, we know hindsight's 2020. We know that, you know, in the last couple of decades, people have said Superman first flies in Superman number 10. But, you know, nobody, I think, obviously really told any of the creators because they still try to kind of, he's flying, but they're not calling it flying. And then we have here where, because obviously in that previous page, he was flying Fellows around the area to look for somebody.
Yes.
So if the artist, for example, knows that he can fly, if that's what he's trying to show there, why does he need to grab a piece of the outcropping to pull himself up? He should be changing into his Superman outfit as he's falling and then just flies right back up. But that's you know, because they haven't officially said that he's flying. It seems like there's a big, huge miscommunication there between everybody involved about, Superman's flying
abilities. Get over Lois's leg there where she falls.
I didn't notice that until you brought it up. I'm going to zoom in on it.
That is bad. That is just bad art. I'm sorry, but it's just...
Look at that.
In normal situations, I do not know that the knee bends that way. I mean, it just...
That's not like a Rob Liefeld you know, action pose mistake. That's just a weird, that, like you said, I did that in 15 seconds.
And if you really want to see how messed up it is, look closely at the foot. The heel is pointing out towards us.
Oh my God, I didn't notice that either.
So even more so, it's like,
man.
So
it's been bent whatever backwards he did
to her
twisted.
To get her over the cliff. Boy, she fought so much that maybe in 1941 they would have to take that off. I don't know if you had the technology to fix that then.
That's crazy. But wow.
That leg was all messed up.
I might have to put that up on social media now.
What happened to Lois's leg?
Wow.
Did she ever walk it? Is this Lois's Batgirl moment where she's in a wheelchair? Yeah, sorry.
So
no, I don't mean that maliciously.
Final thoughts on this one. I did enjoy it. I do think it was a crazy fun adventure. I do always, however, when I read one of these stories that I think is crazy fun, I, you know, say it all the time. I always have to compare it to the old man fighting Superman in the basement of the orphanage. As far as
it wasn't where that crazy.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it's below that. And I also think of one of the few two-parters was in an Action Comics with the Ultra Humanite, who then has his brain put into the body of the actress, and they have that whole underground layer and everything. I don't remember a lot about that story, but I remember feeling it was super crazy. But so this is below those. But it's still up there.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been calmer stories than this one. A little bit more straightforward.
Yeah. We've yet to hit a story in which I can say that was crazier than Superman fighting an old man in the basement of an orphanage.
I don't know. We might honestly have to wait until like the Silver Age books where they really tried to be crazy to find one better than the dude with the what was it? Torture chambers in the bottom of his orphanage that he ran.
And I can never remember what issue that is, whether it's Action, whether it's Superman, but I'll look it up afterwards and I'll have
I think it was Superman. I don't think we were in, or in Action. I don't think we were in Superman yet.
Maybe
I don't
not.
Think we
Maybe
had
not,
one
yeah.
yet.
I'll have my assistant, Alice, the voice, tell us what that is.
I'd say it'll turn out to be in the first 10 to 15. It would have to be Action stories because it was pretty early on and we were like, dude.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. I feel it was
so
pretty
early. So soon this just got way out there. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
The issue the boys are talking about is Action Comics number 27 from June of 1940. And the story was called Brentwood Home for Wayward Youth.
I enjoyed the story. Like I said, you know, there were a couple places that kind of made me stop for a minute, but it was easy for me to get back into the story. Sitting and talking like this, I'll notice more things. Like, I noticed Lois's leg before, but I didn't realize that it was turned as much as it was until I was like, that's the heel of her okay, that's that.
I tell you, those are great moments on our shows when one of us don't realize we're seeing something until we're on. Those are great moments.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's like we've read this who knows how many times over the past who knows how long. And then when we record, we're like, oh, did you see that dude in the... That's cool. Which is cool that we're paying that much attention while we're doing this to notice some little thing in the corner or in the background or whatever. So, yep. Good stuff. So far, issue 11 of Superman has not disappointed.
Yeah.
I think there's probably two... Maybe three, maybe just two more stories to finish this issue.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll keep up this feel because it's been fun.
Yeah. All right. Want to wrap it up?
Yes, sir.
All right. On the next episode, a mysterious malady grips Metropolis, turning victims hideous, mad, and finally dead. As terror spreads through the city, Superman races across continents to confront the unseen menace behind the Yellow Plague. That's coming up on episode number 92, when Ed and I'll take a look at the third story from Superman number 11, The Yellow Plague, which was published by DC Comics in May of 1991. So until next time, folks, I'm Steven, that's Ed, and this was the Superman Super Show.
Thanks for listening.
Ciao, all.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.